All right,
Niran Zakaria.
So we saw the Orfa Shelf in the beginning of the Simon on this, where he says, like, oh, so just brings some psukim, very organized presentation. And he says, okay, it's impossible to say. First thing he says, impossible to say, like the Pashtos, then Yechrava Olam. So therefore, it must be something else. So he says, oh, Chazal have this tradition, it's a Poel. And he brings all the various proofs that it's a Poel. And then at the end, he just has this kind of interesting comment. He says, like, oh, well, at the end of the day, Velama Sasma HaTorah. So wait, why was the Torah so sussum about this matter? And he thinks that no, it's actually a virtue for the Torah to be kind of unclear in this regard. But Nisha Samcha al Torah Shabal Peh Lahoros. The below Kabbalah's Chazal af mitzos hamuvuaros ein lahem perush. The Torah Shabal Peh nosenes chios la Torah Shabchav k'neshama l'guf. It's a big theme in his Hakdama about kind of really trying to buttress up the authority and necessity of Torah Shabbat Peh.
Nice.
Very interesting.
This is a
good example.
Yeah, it's cool. That's like the Smag. The Smag's Hakdama is all about that also. You know, it's like there's no like meaning. It's like the Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shabbat Chasav is just underdetermined without any Torah Shabbat Peh analysis. It's a nice example of Tower Case. That's your response to Cole, I take it. Yeah, nice. All right, so without further ado, let's talk about our topic for today, which is what's the scope of the Poel's right to eat? In what cases is he allowed to eat? In what manner is he allowed to eat? So you might call this the time, place, and manner analysis of the Poel's Zechus Achila. I would say right of Achila, but I don't want to get our leader all upset from his Sichas Musar. So I'll talk about some of the general limitations here to survey the time, place, and manner restrictions. So we get the Mishnah on Pei Zayin Amud Aleph. The general rule is Elo Ochim Min HaTorah, if you're Oseh B'Mechubah L'Karka B'Shas Gmar Melacha. So if you're working on something that's agricultural and attached to the ground still, you could eat B'Shas Gmar Melacha. Actually, I think that's pretty agreed upon in this context as to what it means. So it's like at the final stage of production, is that right? Meaning when you're harvesting, when you're pulling the grapes off the trees, when you're picking the figs. Looks like Adin has some sort of harvesting tool on him. But
not Adin. Okay. But I think it's sort of taking on the latter half of the pasuk and saying, oh, when it's the time that you're putting it into your basket or using the cutty thingy, to be technical, that's like Gemar Malacha. It's kind of like just playing off the latter half of the pasuk.
Yeah. Right? At the moment of harvesting, that's right. And then there's a separate rule of something is talush min hakarka, but still gidule karka. It's Achlo Nigmar Malachto. So before Gmar Malach until the final stage of production. So you basically have this window here for agriculture. The Poel's right to eat begins at the last stage of its attached life, the final stage of its attached growth, until the Gmar Malach. It's just an interesting window. I don't know if anybody has any thoughts like as to why that should be the window, like why it should, the Poel's right should be limited to those cases. Just to think of it conceptually, you could say something like, if before the final stage of production, it's too early, meaning it's not really edible, it's not a normal time for it to be eaten. So, it doesn't make sense to grant eating rights in something that's still supposed to be growing, still supposed to be on the tree. And then once it's at its final stage of production, once the production is totally completed, there's Gemar Malacha and it's Talush. So it's like the dough has been made into challah or whatever, then it's already off limits because it's past the productive stage.
Right?
It's no longer being worked on still. So it's an interesting thing just to think about, like why this window makes sense. If you look back at this, if you look back at this, often you have things to say like, oh, when is the balabais makbid? The balabais is like less makbid at these stages of production. You might think also in terms of at what point the Poel making a genuine contribution to the pre. So it's like before Gemar Malacha and after he's Tolei Shemini Ilan. But it's interesting just to think about why this should be the window. Cool.
Yeah, I wanted to suggest something regarding this. So there's there are like two broad ways to understand this the status of the fruit, say, that the poel eats. One is as like some kind of compensation for services rendered, and the other is as like some kind of limited property right, where the if you view it as the first, that it's like compensation for services rendered rather than just being the worker is like the occasion for this limited property right, then these limits don't make very much sense. It seems like a lot of arbitrary line drawing. But if you think that the if you have the view that like, well, you know, it's not obvious that the it's not obvious that this is maybe closer to the second thing you said. It's not obvious, we view it as obvious, but maybe it's not obvious that like the Balabais has the right to the picked fruit. He has the right to the fruit as it is on the stems. But if you're making somebody, I don't know, some kind of partner in the transition of the fruit from one state to another, so that contribution bestows, or rather we can insert reasonably at that point, this kind of like limited privilege of consumption. If you view it that way, then I think it really does make a lot of sense why Gmar Malacha would be the place to do it. Obviously, there are different like these two elements are present in different ways to different degrees throughout the parak. But I think this one is very much like a, you know, the poel is like a little bit of an owner of
So it's like you have to insert him at like
a right the tullish is a kind of mice akinian is like a, you know, type thing. Anyway,
yeah, that's very nice. I like that suggestion, Evan.
Yeah, just add also, if we're, take the Rebbe Chaya, that kind of tsar / taiva approach, this is also just when it's readily available to eat, right? So if it's mechubar, until you pluck it off, right, that's the Gemara Malacha, presumably, then it just, you're not going to eat it off the stem. And then once it's talush, until you're actually processing it, that's presumably when you're going to have the most taiva to eat it. Like it's kind of maybe a little more pragmatic. Just like that's when it's available to eat.
Exactly. Before it's ripe, you know, it doesn't really make sense. It's not the kind of thing that you're going to desire. And also once it's put away in storage, right, it's, you know, that's reasonably off limits. You know, like the Ibn Ezra says, in this kind of external view of desire that, you know, it's just, it's realistically, you know, the things locked away in the storage house, it's not the kind of thing that you reasonably could desire, right? So yeah, you could think in those terms also. Yeah, keep these in mind as we go through the specific dinim here. So the first, I want to talk about the several limitations here. So the first is that you're limited to the species that you're working on. So you get this from the Mishnah on Sadi Aleph from Amud Beis. Ha'yoseh b'te'enim lo yochal ba'anavim, ba'anavim lo yochal b'te'enim. So it's not even like, hey, you're working for the Baal Bayis, so you have free rein to eat from his produce. It's like if you're working on figs, then your entitlement is limited to figs. And if you're working on grapes, then your entitlement is limited to grapes. So it's actually like a pretty narrow right. And the Rashba here even says that the only havamina the Gemara would have about being able to eat figs when you're working on grapes and vice versa is if you're hired to work on both of them. If you're niskar leros te'enim belitzer anavim, then you might have a havamina that you could eat one while you're working on the other. And even that is shot down. But if you're just hired to work on anavim, there's not even a havamina that you should have any entitlement to the figs. I just think this is interesting because going back to Issi ben Yehuda, that it's bivias kol adam akasa medaber, you might think that like all you really need is like reshus to be there. And once you have reshus to be there, you're working for the guy that gives you some license to eat from what's going on. But here you see that the license is much narrower. Maybe this is inconsistent with Issi ben Yehuda. The license is really just like on the thing that you're producing. And so it's like very closely connected to your actual contribution. Evan, do you have a hand on this, or?
Yeah, I just think that Cole's like idea of like Maissa Kinyan or Maissa Baalus like really fits in well here. Like, it's only on the thing that you're literally working with that you have that sort of transaction, or even that compensation. If you want to go, I don't know which Hofeldian word would be compensation, but
yeah,
but certainly if it's some sort of claim, that'd fit pretty well with this.
Yeah, and you can see the language here of the Rashba, mimin sha'ata nosin achshav lekeliyav shel bala bayis achshav. I mean, that's what you're... Sorry, mimin sha'eno nosin achshav lekeliyav shel bala bayis eno ocha. So you're only allowed to eat from the thing that you're actually laboring on, which is a very limited right to like your actual contribution to the thing. You see a similar kind of idea of limitation to the min that you're laboring on in this braisa. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Bar Avua Pol Amatzlo Hilchu Shesi the Eir Begat Ochan Anavim VeEin Shlos Nyayin Misha Hilchu Shesi the Eir Begat Ochan Anavim VeShlos Nyayin. So the idea here is that you're picking grapes and then you're crushing them in the vat. Shua, this should remind you of our Dr. Graf days. Did you do Yain Esef or no? Yeah, don't even remember.
We did Kiddush Hashem. We did Rivas.
Okay, so it shouldn't remind you then of the Dr. Grach days. But the idea here is that if you're working on grapes, you don't have a right to drink the wine. And if you're working on wine, you don't have a right to drink the grapes. So Gemara says, if you're just picking grapes, you can't drink at all. But once you start crushing the grapes and you're holy chesi be'er begat, you walk in two directions, crushing wine, crushing them, then you're considered to be working in the anavim and you're entitled to them. As Rashi here says, Hachlo holchu shesi be'er begat, ein malachta nikeres be'yayin, elabanavim, lefikach ein shos in yayin, tahavli osem imin zev, ocha b'min acher. So again, you see it's limited to the species. Did anybody get a chance to see this cute Trumas Hadeshen? Zachariah, tell us about the Trumas Hadeshen. It's a cute one.
Yeah, so Shaila is, if you add the new grapes to the harvest and you said Shafianu, do you also say Shafianu when the first wine from the harvest comes in?
So that's right. And could you make a Shafianu on the new grapes and on the new wine of the season? Or is it considered the same thing that you already made a Shafianu? So what is the answer? What's his proof and what's his answer?
Right, so he answers in the affirmative. First he tries to prove from like, oh, well, we know there are different species of cherries and you can make a Shafianu on each of those. But he says that might not be comparable. They're gufa muchlakim. And then he brings it from our Gemara that says, oh, from the fact that our Gemara considers workers can eat grapes and not wine, even though it's literally from the exact same thing that they brought, must be that we consider them sheminim in like kol Torah kula. And therefore, you can make independent shefianos on them.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Right? So he says you could show that the halacha distinguishes these as two distinct species from the fact that the worker can't drink wine when he's working on the grapes. And so then he just says that he applies that straightforwardly to the Shechianu instance and says that you can make a separate Shechianu because you see it's a different species. Yeah, it's a cute cute Shechianu halacha that emerges from this discussion. The Minchas Chinuch here in Mitzvah Tavkavayin Vav, so he talks about this species issue and he has this line, curious to hear what we all think about this. He says, V'osa begefen v'ochel b'te'inim. So let's say somebody violated this principle, right? So he eats from a different species, from a species other than the one he's laboring on. Bivadai mafkinan mine, ki hu gezel gomor biveror. I don't know why he needed to say biveror. I don't know why that adds anything. But what's the Minchas Chinuch's contention here? And do you agree with it? Does this sound right?
I think here it might apply. I think he applies it really like willy-nilly to like every single example. Anytime you step out of bounds of your heter, you're instantly into an iser gazela. I think that's a certain approach. Like if you say there's all the pasuk has come to say that there's a heter gazela and you're really on the edge of your rope, the pole barely has a right to eat here, then like, okay, yeah, anytime you step out of line, it's gazela. I think if you kind of come with the premise, I know it, as he has a much broader right to eat, maybe like the premise, the basic assumption of Isi Ben Yehuda, like, yeah, once you enter the field, you're kind of have full access, just we're going to apply some limitations. And if you violate those limitations, okay, you violated those limitations, but it's not a gazela.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what I was thinking, meaning are two things going on here in this whole sugya, meaning A, there's a matir on gazelle. Evan, you tell us. Go for it.
No. You're that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, is the, we had this question a lot come up last year, the idea of like, is there really a thing as breaking an assay, or is there sort of like a lob that underneath? And so is the violation of, you know, Kitavo Bekerem its own kind of thing, or is Kitavo Bekerem just a matir for Gzela? And if you break that, you now default back to just doing Gezo.
Yeah, the way I would put it is, that's a good way of saying it. I would put it slightly differently. I would say the question is, are there two dinim going on here or only one din? Meaning, is there a double din of firstly, there's the heter on Gzela for the poel because he's the worker. You know, Kisava Bukaram Riacha, you have a right to be there, you have a right to take. And moreover, that's a broad license. But the Torah then says you only should eat from certain things, and if you eat beyond that, you violate Velkal Yochal Lo Sitein as like a separate prohibition. So there are two things going on here: a broad license of Gezel, and then the separate admonition of don't eat too much, Velkal Yochal Lo Sitein. Or is there only one thing, Dehainu, just a matir on Gezel, and as Zacharia said, you're walking on this at the edge of your rope. Eating anything beyond your license is a kind of a theft, kind of a gazelle from the Baal Bayis. And from the Minchas Chinuch, you definitely get the sense that all there is there, and anything beyond that is like a gazela. So let's take the two hands. We have Adin and then Zolt. Zolt, how come you muted your screen?
Oh, I have to fix that. The video's not working.
Yeah. Let's take Adin and then we'll get Zolt.
So I think like this could just bring it back to like the kind of the overall economic, I don't know, call it anxiety or the concern for having a functioning economy could touch it a little bit. Like how nervous are we about that overall principle could inform like the closeness to Gezel of like, is this kind of like a chiddush that we're like really being matir, like the somewhat strong property right that like that kind of the economy relies upon, or going like the Rav Hirsch model of if everything really kind of should belong to everyone, then it's I think we could more easily make the jump to like, okay, so you have a special setup here where, with a special permission, liberty, whatever you want to call it, like Zachariah was suggesting. Just a thought in terms of like what could motivate the two.
Trying to tie it into like the broader question of the underlying Mechai.
Yeah,
very interesting. Zolt?
According to the model that Elkei Echalotitain is not just like modifying the lav, the assay, but it's kind of like a separate lav. So like what differentiates it from just like a specialized version of Gzela?
Yeah.
Right, like how do we define it? What's the significance of Elkei Echalotitain more than just like Stam Gzela? Is it like a different dinim? Does it like other... I'd be interested in exploring that.
Totally. I think the theoretical possibility is to say that all there is, the lav of El Kal Yechol Lo Sitein is something more like ribis. It's mitam, almost like counter gemilas chasadin. That, you know, you shouldn't be a chazer. Like, it's wrong. Just don't eat too much. But it's not the kind of like chiv mamon obligation, the breach of which will constitute, you know, an Isser Gezel with a duty to compensate, b'chule, b'chule. And Yoni, we definitely have the paradigm of, you know, Isurim that are much weaker than Chiyuvei Mammon, like we saw in the Ramban, right? Torah says you could eat. That's like a bona fide property, right? But the Torah also says that you owe it to the Baal HaBayis not to eat too much without triggering an Isser Gezel. That would be the model, Yoni. That makes sense?
It makes sense. Just what's interesting is it's not like so obvious to me then that like Minchin is wrong. And then even if you do believe Kalei Chalot Yitain could be like a general separate Isser, it could be like, how do you know which exceptions, which limitations, so to speak, on what the poel can eat would be dafka kalya chalotitain, not gazela. Like, it's not like the more, I guess, the more like integral you think this din is to the din of kalya to like this particular din of what type of food you're eating. Is integral to the actual permission of the poel, the more you're going to consider that actually anything else is definitely gazela, not a din of kalya chalotitain.
Yeah, I agree. I'd want to keep my eyes open to see in how the Rishonim characterize the kalya chalotitain to see what kind of iser it is. I think that's what we have to keep our eyes open for. Totally. I agree with that. Gabe?
I'm a little bit confused about why this minchas chinuch isn't obvious to us. I may have missed something, but I would have assumed al-kalya chalotitain is a limit on quantity or the manner in which you're picking, but not the crop from which you're eating. And if we really believe that, like, I don't know, let's take your Lockean theory that it's about sort of the way in which you've mixed your labor with production and you've earned a right to eat this food. Like, well, you haven't worked on the zaytim, so you haven't, you don't have this chos achila, you don't have a property right in that crop, and taking something would be stealing.
Yeah, but Gabe, let's say Rabbeinu Bachi was right, that it's just not fair for the poel to be, you know, around all this good food without an ability to consume. Whereas Adin was saying, it's more like this Hersheyan idea that, you know, the Rabbeinu Shlom wants you to know that, like, the property rights aren't fully the Baal HaBayis in some way. As Yakir was telling us earlier, that it's not even about the poel, right? It's just the Torah wants to be mafkir some of the zechuyos to other people. You could easily see how that would apply to even things that the worker is not laboring. No?
Sort of. I mean, like, I think there are limitations to this, right? It's this heter. Like, you can't go into Baal HaBayis' house and, like, start eating, like, from his pantry. There are obvious limitations, and the limitation that we've decided is based on which crop you're working from. So even under this halamitzvot, I'm not particularly swayed by this.
I hear, but my model would be to say there's a broad license that's matir the iser gezel, and then that's restricted not by vel kalya chalotitain, which is not a gezel halacha, but, you know, something like you have this imperfect duty owed to the Baal HaBayis, like a chesed duty, not to eat too much, right?
That sounds like you're just multiplying entities, Itamar.
Here's just an example to think of. Everybody knows that when you go into a Starbucks, you could take a few Splenda, you take a two or three Splenda packages for your coffee, right?
Every man knows that.
But what happens if you were to walk in there and, like, scoop up, like, a handful of Splenda packages and stuff them into your pocketbook or your knapsack, right? It's an interesting question whether is that a kind of gezel because you exceeded, like, the license that you have? Or is the idea, like, you know, yeah, you know, you can take as much as you want, but it's the wrong thing to do to take too much, right? It doesn't trigger innis or gezel. And I'm wondering, vel kalya chalotitain, is that saying that if you take a handful of Splenda things, you violate gezel? Or is the kalya chalotitain saying, look, you could, you know, just don't take too much. That's like it's not the way to think of the halacha. You owe it to Starbucks not to take too much. That's kind of the subject.
I think that's an interesting question. I just don't think that's relevant to this minchas chinuch, because he's talking about a different crop, which isn't the Splenda that you're allowed to take. It's something which you weren't permitted to take.
Yeah.
Well, the idea would be that you have this general relationship with the Baal HaBayis, but it's, you know, there's a, you know, I just think the problem with Itamar, with what Itamar is saying, is it's a general relationship. So you're, you know, you have a worker employer relationship with the Baal HaBayis. So, you know, you're entitled generally to what the Baal HaBayis is, but, you know, it's restricted. I just think that's, like, too many. I just think that there's an underdetermination problem. The underdetermination problem is created by ontological profligacy, which is all an uptown way of saying, like, this is just, like, too much. Like, it's not tightly adequated to the explanandum.
I got it. Yeah. I'm just saying that in the background here, I think Zachariah is right to point us to Issi Ben Yehuda, who says you don't even need to be laboring to get the right. And so the question then is, within where the father would put it is, you know, how much of Issi ben Yehuda exists within the non-Issi view, right? It's like, mi de Issi nishma le, right? That's how he would put it. You know, it, maybe you need labor, but like the labor thing, it doesn't exhaust, doesn't fully capture the extension of the permission. Shua, you have a comment on this?
I was just going to say, like, I mean, I think this is probably at least like referential to what everyone else was saying, but I think you can also think about it in terms of like a embezzlement versus gzela type thing. Like think about it like in circuits of like shomrim and what you need to do in order to
What is embezzlement?
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, just like in like
what is it?
There's a difference like, between like
ready definition of embezzlement.
They're like separate. They're separate. Like crimes of like robbery and embezzlement. Like embezzlement is like something that you had. It's like it's usli yode behatera type things, you know. And I think that like if you
you had a fiduciary, it's like a embezzlement is like fiduciary misfeasance.
Sure, or it's like embezzlement. But anyway, like I think the shomrim is probably like a little bit. Can shine like a little bit of light. The idea of like what you need to do to be motzi yourself from heter to iser, and so like the two tzadim here are like you don't have to do anything. This is why I feel like it's just reframing what you guys were saying. You don't have to do anything. It's already outside of your purview, or you have some kind of like attachment to this thing, either because of EC or because you're a like Cole said, you're a poel, or because you're I guess also. Because of, I don't know what the alternative is. Maybe, those either of those. But I think that that's kind of like it comes at it more from the Gezel point of view than the Velkalyach point of view.
Yeah,
I think to correspond to Gabe's like the Chiddush. I think the Chiddush in the I think it's along the lines of what she was saying about like embezzled, like how we view this is that. So we can say that the poll has some sort of hofeldi in something, liberty, claim right, property right, to $10 worth of grapes. That's like the amount, like that's what he has. Okay, so he ate $10 worth of tainim. But in terms of, if we're going to view it strictly as like, maybe not going so far as compensatory, but like, okay, so he has a claim on a certain amount of property that theoretically should belong to the Baal Bayis. Okay, but he ate the wrong thing. So he maybe violated Velkalifa, he violated some sort of ancillary thing, but okay, so we eat $10 worth of tain instead of $10 worth of grapes. But like, no, that's mamash gzela.
That like, yeah, that's another way.
The fetish.
Yeah, that's a good way.
Like
We'll see a stronger variant on this idea actually when he talks about lahav hev ba'or and motzeitz, which is bedavar acher, where I think you get that variant even stronger. That's a very good point, Adin. If you read the honorary article,
Adin, I appreciate that.
Yeah, Gabe, you hear that? You hear that, Adin's point?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you read the honorary point, by the way, he actually has this suggestion, which is funny, that given that you could always steal from somebody and pay compensation, so honorary, like, sorry, this is the honorary book. It's always fun when you take a book out of storage, you know, library. No one's reading this thing. No, it's actually a really famous article. But he entertains this idea, like, you know, maybe people really own just, like, certain value amounts, not, like, things. But it's just an interesting thing to think about. But again, that's kind of what you were saying just now, right? Like the Paul has some entitlement to a certain amount of achila rights. Where exactly he satisfies them from, you know, there should be a certain kind of invariance. Doesn't matter where he satisfies it from. It's an interesting point.
Yeah, or at least maybe that there's a lechatchila place to satisfy them from, but we're not going to call it, like, he doesn't have to pay back, like, Mafkinan Mine, I think, is the Kiddush. They're like, correct. You really have to pay it back. It's as if you went in, like Gabe said, it's as if you went into his house and collected your rights in DVDs or something.
Yeah. Gabe, did you have a second hand up? Did you have a hand, Gabe?
No, it's a lingering hand, but maybe just to add one comment to Adin's point. I think what Adin's saying makes much more sense if we view this as in a Sechirus model or a right which is entitled to you through the contract. From Mishas Mashicha, Chayav Leibim Zonos
Reha. Exactly. Yeah,
but totally. If we're not in that framework, it's harder to say what it did say.
Yeah, I think that's a nice point. Okay, so I want to move on a little bit here. So I just want to make one more comment on this species thing. The Gemara even entertains the suggestion, though leaves it as a suffix, is the limitation just from one species to another, or is it even narrower? So let's say you're working on the same species, but it's a physically distinct tree. Do you have the right to eat it? So, I mean, to me, that just sounds like, where do you draw the line question? The Gemara is not specific about whether it's at the specific branch. So it's just an interesting question to think about how broad or how narrow the zchus achila should be. Everyone agrees that there's this limitation on min. The question is, does it also apply to gefen zeh lo yochal gefen acher? Evan, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I guess because I sort of viewed the entire sugya in this light, that I thought this was really just asking like, oh, is it a really biadayim, or is it sort of, if you're working on one like tree, let's say, you can have from that tree? Or is it no, like, mamash, if you're picking this grape, you could put it in your mouth, but like, you can't like use two hands,
nah, kind of thing. So you want to go even narrower than gefen?
Yeah, I thought that this was just like kind of asking the underlying question of, okay, if you're picking this up, like fruit, can you eat it? Or does your zechus achila like extend to like things that you're not literally picking and eating right now?
That's interesting.
And again, working with the idea of like, oh, you need to make really the Maisa Kinyan and Maisa Baalus kind of thing.
Evan, I would think that works nicely with like the Rabbeinu Bachi idea. You know, it's like licking.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like you're licking your fingers. You want to, you know, as you're putting the stuff in your shopping cart, you need to pop a grape in your mouth kind of thing.
Right, exactly.
Like, oh, I'm going to buy grapes from Walmart, so let me taste some of the apples, right? Or let me taste a different bundle of grapes, right? It's like literally like this narrow negative thing, maybe.
It's certainly not like a worker's, like making sure your worker's like a satiated thing. Right? I think like tying this back to Nafsha Sadecha, Kenafsha Sadecha. It's like that's kind of being played around here, because if you would say that, then maybe, you know, you can eat whatever you needs in order to satiate. But saying that, no, it's literally the thing that he's picking is really, really limiting.
Yeah, it's good. So the next one, let's turn to the next limitation here that the Gemara has. So the Gemara in Pei Zayin talks about the achalta v'lo motzeitz, anavim v'lo davar acher. So you're not allowed to suck the juice out of the grape and throw away the peel or the skin and the rest of it. I don't know. Have you ever seen anybody do that? Is that a thing to like suck grapes and throw out the rest? Never seen.
The premise here is that they expect you to like eat the seeds if you're really hungry, which is kind of, I don't know, I found strange.
Yeah. Well, let's see what it is.
I guess
if you're going to eat it, you got to consume the whole thing. Right, you can't just suck out the juice and throw away the remainder. And anum below davar acher, you can't like spice up the grape. You know, you can't pour some salt on it. Rashi here says velo motzeitz hayayin v'zorek hacharzanim. If you're going to eat, you got to eat the whole thing. You can't just sip out the juice. Velo anum b'davar acher litvul anum b'melach lamatgan sheyochal harbe. You can't bring your spices to you know, make the grapes more appetizing, which will induce you to eat more. So there's that limitation. So the Rimilu Neil offers a nice theory for why this would be the case. So what's his first answer? Anybody want to take us through the first answer of the Rimilu Neil of the Chalta Bala Motzeitz?
By the way, just as, sorry, I was paying a little bit of attention to something else. This is not important at all, but if you've ever been to a vineyard, you'll know that wine grapes don't taste good. And like when you eat wine grapes, what people do is suck out the inside because the skins have like a very bitter, they're very thick, they have a very bitter taste.
Ah,
there you go.
That's good. That explains the sugya. Thanks, Shiro. It's actually really helpful.
Always good to have a grasp of the realia.
Yeah, our the viticulture, you know. I have my Yayin Bimei Abenayim book. I don't know if that's talked about there. No.
Yayin bimea benayim. That's a
sound. Yayin bimea benayim.
Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah.
Yemea Beinayim is Hebrew for Middle Ages.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Pretty original, no?
Yeah, no, that's good.
So what does the Remus O'Neil say? What's his first answer? Anybody want to walk us through it? All right, I'll walk us through it. So his first answer here, Bayadin, his first answer here is Asr lepoel sheyochal ha'anavim b'sha she'eno toe blahem she'eno yochal lechol ha'chartzanim v'hazag ala mote tayayin ma'anavim v'zorek ha'kli b'chitzona b'vaday hu ochel osa b'achila gasa v'ein ze k'naf shecha savecha l'fi she'yoser mi savecha hu. So what do you think is going on here in this part?
Yeah, this is sort of, I was going back, what I was foreshadowing is the idea that maybe your ability to eat is only so that you are satiated and can like perform your well as a worker.
That's right.
And so just by sucking out the juices, you're not getting the full nutritional, you know, utilitarian benefit from this grape. And so
you don't have to throw in utilitarian here. You know, you don't have to. But
that's not saying that. That's definitely what's happening, but there's definitely some sort of very limited scope as to why you're allowed to eat in this first answer. And it definitely has to do with making sure you're, you know, or allowing you to eat only for satiation purposes.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, you know, subsistence, a little more than subsistence. You should have a good meal. Like you should have a satisfied meal, but you can't be, can have like picky tastes, right? Or champagne tastes in how you're going to consume the thing. So the license is for savecha, but not yoser mi savecha. And the Rimu Lemiel thinks that, look, you know, somebody who's like picky about which kinds of things he's going to eat, that person is not really eating for svia. They're eating, you know, beyond that. That's an interesting observation. Cole, yeah.
I just have to say, like, this is like very, very nice Rimmel and Neil, but it's he's like a shtickle darshan over here. He's like, oh, you're eating that much. It's not because, you know, it's not because you tzairich haguf. It's epis because, you know, you just like the taste. It's like, I'm actually not persuaded that the Torah has. So we
this
do
is like,
have.
This is like classic Marsha Kola. Like, oh, we drink coffee without milk and sugar, because if you drink it and sugar, then you're drinking it to enjoy. You're not drinking it.
Right. L'shem Shemayim. Exactly. I think the more, the kind of the tighter way to explain this din is that you don't have a right. This is a non-traditional property right. We're not allowing you to make use of the, we're not allowing, this is in some sense a redescription, but I actually think it makes sense to redescribe it this way. Like, we're not allowing you to make use of these items as yours beyond the very limited contribution you make to like the items in general being, you know, picked and given to the Baal Bayis, you know, as you know, in the employment context. And so like, this is not, you know, you're not here to enjoy a meal. Like, you have this limited right, but that's it. And which also explains why you can't designate like your wife and kid as beneficiaries. Like this explains
right.
Well, a whole
right. We'll
bunch
talk
of
about the power to transfer, right?
Yeah.
I think you're right in that last formulation here about, it's only Bisha, it's only Mipnesha Toei Blahem. Like if you're really desperate to eat the thing, which he thinks correlates to Kadei Svia, right? It's like, if you really need the thing, then that's the extent of your permission. And he just thinks that there's no such thing as needing the more refined culinary taste of it, right? It's like, you know, like Rav Lichtenstein, when he gets criticized as like American, I'm like, yeah. I don't know. I think so. Yeah, it's home from school. Their school canceled. They shut down for 2 weeks because of COVID cases in the area. fun times. But, you know, Wilkinson, when he criticizes American, like, consumerism, or he'll talk about, like, you know, who reads the food section? Like, people read the food section of the New York Times. You know, what?
That's the most read section of the New York Times, I think.
Right. Those, like, these kosher cookbooks are, like, huge industry, you know? Like, what's this, Kosher in Brooklyn or whatever? Busy in Brooklyn? I don't know, whatever. But yeah, Wilkinson thinks that's like the quintessence of just like hedonistic desires. And so maybe there's something like that going
pretty
on.
Arrogant comment.
What's that, Yoni?
It's a pretty arrogant comment.
Oh, that's your
fault. Okay, everyone has like things they enjoy. What, you can't enjoy food? People can't be foodies? Is that like so hedonistic to be a foodie?
That's right.
Yeah, it's disgusting to be a foodie.
It's okay there's to like to follow that, sports. Like he follows like baseball.
No, it's not okay to follow sports. He followed baseball because it was like an occasion for human excellence, not because it was like OMG so fun. There is nothing less attractive than a foodie. I mean, people who like spend lots
right,
of time.
Right, cool. You don't have to like foodies either. I'm not a foodie, but I'm not like so like such so arrogant
Cole,
that
if you
like,
no, to, I know. Like, I go further than you.
Cole, if you happen to meet any attractive foodies, feel free to send them my way because that.
I'm doubly offended by that.
That's great. You know, by the way, just you kind of get this, it's interesting. The part of the I guess I wonder if the Rimmel O'Neill is a raya that it's okay to be a foodie in general, just not at the expense of the Bala bias. You know? But the point here is that if you think that the license is narrowly because you're like, you really desire it, you know, it's like you need the thing, the Rimmel O'Neill thinks that's inconsistent with this kind of achila gasa, this gluttonous eating where you're zorech the klipa. He has a second view as to why the halachir should be narrowly applied to requiring the poel to eat the entire thing, the chalta v'lo motzeitz. What's his second answer here?
The second answer is sort of more just going back to the gezel stuff. Like you got $10 worth, eat your $10 worth, and if you're gonna only suck out the juices, you're gonna end eating more than you're expected.
Yeah,
so it's a little more pragmatic.
Yeah, it's more pragmatic sense. What's the underlying issue?
It's sort of, I think, you're only supposed to eat like a certain amount, right? You're not meant to, you know, go ham and cause a real hefset to the Baal.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
The Torah wants to minimize the cost to the Baal HaBayis.
It's like an expression of Velkeh Chalotitain. It's like, it's not literally, but it's effectively the same type of limitation.
It depends how we understand Velkeh Chalotitain, because that could just be about taking things away, right? Like walking off from the job with them. But
but it's limiting effectively, you're right, that's my point.
Yes. It's
limitations.
But primarily here, out of the concern of the cost to the Baal HaBayis. So it's like the Torah here is worried about the burden imposed on the Baal HaBayis. And so it says, sure, you could eat, but you have to minimize the cost it's going to impose on your employer. So if you're eating to satiate your hunger, if you're willing to spend a lot of money on yourself to pay for more grapes, that's great. But you can't get that through your zchus achila, which I think it's an interesting thing to say that midoraisa here, the Torah is calculating the cost to the Baal HaBayis and how it assigns this property right to the poel. This is echoes to my mind of the Bas Sefer Abatim, who was very worried about the kapeda of the Baal HaBayis. And here it's about the hefsid of the Baal HaBayis. That's why the Torah limits it to v'chalta v'lo motzeitz, because you'll consume more if you're just sucking out the juice. Everybody have a hand on this? Or Gabe? Gabe, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I think this is an obvious point, but there's a... The way the Torah presents or creates this chus achila, it isn't the way you or I would have done it. We would have allotted a certain amount of mizonos to the Baal HaBayis who's chayav to provide for his worker. And so all of these dinim are ways in which we try and limit or negotiate that strange formulation and make it into something which is more reasonable and more workable.
I don't know if I would have formulated it, you know, if I was writing the Torah, that I would have formulated it in terms of a fixed quantity. I like the idea of, the poel when he's around the kitchen, you could eat kadesh viaso. I would talk.
Yeah, but that's very risky if you have a poel who goes rogue, and like that's not necessarily a practical way of.
Well, I mean, this calls our attention to the moment in.
I'll say this. I want to say this in Hebrew, just because the other company in the house. But bididi hava ovda, that the poeles, you know, is more than helps herself to whatever is available in the cabinets and kitchens. Sometimes
Dick Driver in Tender is the Night fires a servant in the south of France because instead of, like, he says, like, you can drink as much kitchen wine as you like, but you're not allowed to crack open a bottle of Chateau Petrus.
There you go. Gabe, in my instance, it's not fixed as like a certain amount of like an eating allowance. Just understood, eat whatever you need on the job. But sometimes Essie and I look at each other and say, like, really?
But I think that's exactly Gabe's point. It's a little bit arbitrary. Like, you might have a certain standard, and like, maybe you have the right type of standard, but like, every single balabais can have a very different standard of what's like expected and ordinary for a poel to take. So the Torah creates certain standards. That way there's like objective limits and definitions.
Right.
Like, it's definitely true. Like, different hosts assume different things from their guests.
But this,
like,
is
what's an expected thing.
This is a poel, This is
So the same thing is true for especially true. Different companies assume different things for what their employers can do and can't do.
But I'm saying, my response is just that Gabe was saying if we were designing the law, we would make a fixed quantity rule. And I'm saying I don't know if that's better. I mean, that seems like a little like rationing food. It seems like a worse rule. Gabe, do you want to respond to that or?
I mean, I don't know what the right rule is. I guess I just, the problems that we're trying to account for now would have been solved if we had a fixed pseudo allocation for your poll. That's all.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Good. So I want to go a little deeper into this for a moment here. The other part of this din is velo anavim medaber acher. Rashi said you can't dip the grapes into salt to make them sweeter. The Rimmel O'Neill says you can't put salt on them. Or other things that make you more ravenous. Okay, and the Minchas Chinuch writing on this says, "V'lo yochal rak b'masha osa loam davar acher, kigon anavim in pasel and melach." So you can't bring these other things there to make it spicier or whatever. Ve'im ochal mafkinon minei kihu gazlon. Pretty interesting. So if you eat more than that, we're motzi mamon. Like a goslin has to, there's a duty to compensate, secondary duty to compensate. The poel's got to give back that amount. He who goslin, because he's a goslin. So again, Zimun Chaschina Fleshitaso, as Zacharia said, that, you're walking at the edge of the rope here. Whatever is outside of your allowance is an Isser Gezel. Now, look at this. And he says, Dizel lo zichzel lo hatorah. I guess this is also Lishit. He has two formulations that I think are incompatible. Firstly, he says, "Dizelo lichzalah zichzalah Torah." It's beyond the right, beyond the permission that the Torah gave you. The gam hu belavin, and it's also part of the lav. I think he means the lav of the al kali chalositim. B'shemur b'kan ki ocha b'mashalo zichzalah Torah u'gazam over b'chal lavin. It's interesting whether those two points are coextensive. They're two separate points. Like, I'm not sure if the Minchas Chinuch really worked out this relationship between the gzela argument and the v'al kali chalositim argument. But here's the interesting point. What's the measure of damages that the poel has to pay back to the balabayis if he eats anavim v'davar acher? So he salts the anavim. What's the measure of damages that he has to pay? So Zolt, what would you say? Aregalachas, what would you say?
I mean, I'd probably two standards. Either you try to subtract the amount of like that added salt, I guess, adds, like some type of calculation of like how much the salt adds.
What do you mean how much the salt adds?
like how much it affected, I guess, your hunger, or affected the way you ate, and you ate more. So how much more did you eat?
Exactly.
That'd be one way. The other measure would say that the whole thing is kind of like pasnished. Like once you're not following the right way of eating to begin with, then the whole thing is considered invalid.
Exactly. And by pasnish, you mean like a real gzela?
That's preferred to manchas chinuch and be gzela, yeah.
Yeah. Good. So what's the measure of damages if you're ochel anavim im melach? Are you obligated to pay the delta of how much more you ate because of the melach? So that amount is problematic and has to be reimbursed? Or do you say that the Torah never licensed you to eat b'davar acher? So as Zechariah would say, well, so you walked beyond your rope, or your rope ran out at this point, and so that achila was gezel, and you have a chiyuv tashlum in there also. So the Minchas Chinuch is misupik about this, right? He says, blah blah blah. Imkain efshar ba'achal anavim b'davar acher, the ein motziin rak shem mishar rinan, masha yochal yoser al yedei ha'davar acher. That's the delta argument, right? You pay how much more you ate. Efshar, I don't like the way he formulates the second sad. I guess that's a way of saying, just look, formally speaking, there was no permission, right? There was no liberty right. In other words, you owed the Baal HaBayis a duty not to eat this. And so all this stuff is gazelle and is recoverable by the Baal HaBayis. Does anybody have thoughts on like what the two deos here might turn on, and like what exactly is the nub of the suffix? Like what's that issue here? Like why should we go one way rather than the other? Zecharia?
I don't know, like a priori sense about like which one you prefer, but I think if you work in the other direction, as in if you're kind of viewing this using the claim right permission.
Just hold on one second. Hold on one second.
Shoot.
Okay, go ahead, Zecharia.
Yeah, so I think we work from the other direction using our framework we've kind of been using a bit about the claim right versus liberty right. That if you understand you have a specific claim right here, that kind of a thing. But at the end of the day, listen, at the end of the day, you will have a claim to $10 of food or however much specific amount, and therefore you will not be responsible. You will never be responsible for paying the entire thing back. If you understand, it's kind of a more limited.
This is like a Din's argument from before.
Right? Yeah, I think so.
About the poel being entitled to like maybe a certain amount. Is that like that?
Yeah, as in, yeah, exactly. Which is where the Mashah Ochel comes from in the first place. And all these kind of dinim and limitations are just kind of similar to kind of like what Gabe was saying, is kind of just about like setting the bounds of the shear, but really intrinsically he really is a full baal on this stuff. Alternatively, you kind of view it as a reshus. You wouldn't be forced to say this, you could still say the former, but you might be pushed towards the latter and say, yeah, you're right, it's a limited schus, it's a formal schus that you only get. It's not even just a classic schus to eat. You have a schus to eat in a very particular way. And once you're, like I said, once you're outside the Xeris Akasa, the formal bounds, you just simply lose the schus.
Yeah, so it's like, what's the scope of the Hofeldian liberty? Yeah. What's the scope?
Why is I yell at pouting audibly?
We have an intruder here, you can see. That's how you know. Yeah, we have an intruder here. All right. Hey, come say hi. You want to say hi, everyone? Come say hi. Come say hi.
Ayala, come on over. I want to say hi to you.
Oh, wants to say hi. Fun. All right.
Temperamental.
You could, yeah. If you say hi to everyone nicely. Okay, then you can. Yes, so come say hi, and then you can watch. Where are you going to watch? What are you going to watch? That's fine. It's fine. You can go. Go, go. Oh, wait, you have to say hi. And then you can't watch. Say hi to Cole. I know, say hi to Cole, and then I'll let you watch. Say hi to Cole.
Hey, kiddo. How are you?
All right.
that you've lost your powers of speech. That's so interesting. You seem to have such good command of them, you know, on all other occasions.
That's right, yeah. Once upon a time.
Right.
Anything else you want to share? All right. Enjoy your My Little Pony watching.
Time with her gym. I saw that there's like a whole schedule for her.
Yeah, you can see over here. This is their.
Wait, what?
This is their
gym break, right?
Schedules, yeah. Yeah,
that's too much Judaic studies and not enough, like, you know, Latin.
There you go. All right. Sorry, Zachary, the floor is back to you.
Yeah, no, that was just a thing. I said, kind of from the start, I don't have a strong intuition about how much you'd pay, but I think if you're coming with a preconceived notion of why you're allowed to eat in the first place, you'd be more amenable to one than the other. Again, you're not boxed in any sense, but.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Gabe, you have a hand on this or an old hand?
That's an old hand, sorry.
Okay, no problem. I put it down for you. Yeah, I'm with Zachary on this. Still a little not totally unsure what exactly the rub of the suffix, the nub of the suffix is. I mean, I could see it going both ways, trying to figure out what's the scope of the limitation here? And I think one way of saying it, as Zachary said, is that if it's a nub medavar acher, then you have no permission to eat, in which case it's gezel. The other way of looking at it is, I think Zachary is right, that you're entitled to some amount of achila, and we're only going to penalize you like if you eat beyond that, really. But the stuff, like, there's a certain amount that we could all agree that you're entitled to behet there, and that's all. That should be kosher. It's a very interesting stuff I get the Menachina has, very important stuff.
Do we have any parallels to this? Like, trying to think, like, maybe Zeilat Kachim, maybe? If, like, you ate Kachim in some way in the wrong way, or Truma in the wrong way, then there's, like, a Gzela din?
Interesting.
Like, are there any parallels to this where we, like, see that, like, whether, like, if something's a right or a privilege would, like, affect?
Yeah. I'm not sure offhand. Shua, can you think of any examples offhand? Or you?
Sorry, working a little. What are you talking about?
Yeah, are there any examples of where if you did something the wrong way, then it would be, like, an Isser Gezel? So
there's a Twin Peaks episode about this.
Yeah, there's a Twin Peaks episode about this. Also, what about like
what's Twin Peaks?
What about like?
Just don't worry about it.
There's definitely like Gesell Hektish by things that you do wrong. Stuff like that. What else? But like an actual Isser Gezel.
Nothing that comes to mind. I think we can think about it more. I don't know, Yoni, I don't know any examples. Nothing pops to the top of my head, especially in a way that you can measure what the amount of compensation is going to be. But that's why this case is so interesting to think about. So let me just mention this other limitation here the Gemara has on Pei Tes. The Gemara's Masiplek about whether Poel Maoshi Yahavhe Bo'ar V'Yochal. Could you like let the grapes soak in the sun a little bit to become sweeter? Is that a problem? Is that like another medavar acher? So Mar's specific about this and doesn't really come to an answer. Okay, so those are all limitations based off the min, the species, the gefen, etc. And then what kind of achila you're allowed to do. Achila of the chalta below motzeitz, and then another below medavar acher, you can't add an extra spice to the thing. I do want to very quickly raise another kind of time, place, and manner restriction in this halacha, and that is what constitutes somebody being osem maisa. Like what kinds of action does the poel have to be doing to be entitled in the first place? So you get the Mishnah over here. This machlokas. Gabe, you want to tell us about the machlokas, about how you osem b'yad v'raglav? And Rabbi Yossi and Tanakama. Gabe, do you hear us? Oh. Just a black guy.
Sorry, just dealing with my towel for a second. What was the question?
Do you want to just walk us through the machlokas here on Tadiyal from the Bays and the Mishnah? Of how you always have the other
If it's okay, I have my hands a little bit full at the moment, so I'll pass to somebody else.
Fair enough. Okay, you want to take us through?
Yeah, sure. So, machlokas tanaim here. Tanakam is any sort of work, either from just using your hands, legs, or just carrying stuff, that's sufficient to get the right to eat. Rabbi Yehuda says you have to be doing kind of a full body exertion of with hands, using your hands and legs. And the Gemara explains that he's learning this out from Lotatsum Shore, that just as the shore, when it's threshing, it's using its hands and its legs, so too only a worker has the right to eat when he's kind of doing this full body exertion. Later on, the Gemara kind of wonders if this is totally formal, like it's precisely hands and legs, even like a bird, even if those hands are not useful, it has to use that. Or just a stand-in with the idea of kol kocho, that you'd only have a right to eat if you're working with kol kocho, but if you're kind of like, you know, you're just kind of pushing some papers around, then you don't earn the right to eat.
Yeah, exactly. So the Gemara is here trying to figure out what degree of labor exertion or labor participation is required to trigger the heter achilah. Yeah, very good. I think Mara thinks, you know, do you talk about shore as the example, that shore is the other Baragla, or, and this is interesting, is it based off Kisava Bekarim Reyacha B'chol Maida Avid? And what does that remind you of? The Kisava Bekarim Reyacha B'chol Maida Avid, meaning, who cares? It doesn't really matter what kind of work you're doing, even if you're like a...
Issy.
Yeah, I think it's Issy, exactly, right? It's Issy Ben Yehuda. Did I write that here? Yeah, I think I did. And you can see that in the Tosos Yom Tov, he has this diak in the pasuk that it says midalok sev kisavo livtzar bekarim reyacha. It's really just like the zechus knisa, which triggers the right. So I think this gets back to the fundamental question, framing our opening of the sugya. Dehainu, is this even about labor in the first place? Like, how crucial is a labor component? Is something about him working on it? Evan, you know, was talking before about Kenyan. Is that like part of it, like the doing the mice on the right way? Or is it really just about like being allowed to be in the Rishus and the, like, I guess what Adin would call like the Hirschian sense? Like it's like a Torah's mafkir, the property right to others also. Kisava Bekarim Reyacha doesn't say Kisava lived tzor. So like the working is like the excuse for why you're there or why you should have some entitlement. But it's not really the genesis or the reason for the entitlement, the chatchila. I think that's interesting to see that come out in what kind of labor is required. And I'll just mention this and I'll take hands. The Gemara also is mesipak whether mahalech is ghost and maisa dami. Like, do you actually have to be working on the trees to have an entitlement? Or is it enough that you're like walking around the vineyard to harvest things? Like, so the Gemara says, 2 days, so Ruah Mahalech Kos Samaisa Dami, which would explain why you could have a Doraisa entitlement even just walking between the rows of the vineyard, or Mahalech Lav Kos Samaisa Dami, 2 days from the Gemara on Tzadi Aleph on the base. And you can see the Ravid, when he comments on that, Pirish Mahalech Livtzar Kibotzer Dami, meaning you don't even need some, like, physical involvement in the actual Geffen, like commuting to the thing, is a kind of chilas bitzira, which gives you an entitlement also. So at bar here is just the what kind of labor involvement is required to trigger this chasafia. Zolt, do we have a hand?
Yeah, it's kind of surprising that like the main question of like which side is like more intuitive between like whether like has to be the whole goof or has to be like even like some limbs being used and not others, that like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Shita is the one that like ever that's, you know, that we're not really analyzing that one, but instead we're focusing on the fact that like the Kitava Bekarim Reacha sounds like Issy Ben Yehuda. Because that seems like, I would have assumed that's the more like obvious shita. Like, why would you assume that the worker has to use his full guf to work? Like, why isn't it good enough just to like use your arms? Like, do whatever's required standardly to work. And like, you're not cheating the Baal Bayit by being lazy. Like, that should be fine enough. Like, why do we require this like full body workout like in this comparison to like a short, I think is like a fascinating comparison. Like short, like the, like this is almost like, it's not just formal at this point. It becomes almost like there's something conceptually very similar to short, especially since a short doesn't have like separate arms and legs or legs. There's something very, like very surprising, I'd say, that we need to have a riot of Kitabo Bekeramriacha.
Yeah, interesting. I would say this definitely builds on a very strong theme in the sugya that we've spoken about, the connection between Adam, the Po'el, and Losaksim Shorbadisha. I mean, those connections in the sugya are very tight. You know, even the Gemara seemed to think you could export the Malkus Lav of Losaksim to Adam.
Right, but even if that's true, it's still surprising to me that we need like a, we need to really prove like as a real like source that you don't need a full body workout to deserve something. That seems to me almost surprising that we need such a strong like riot to that.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Should be kind of intuitive.
Do you have something more to say about like what explains that side of the Gemara other than just the connection to Shore?
I don't know. I'm not totally sure. I fully understand like why, unless you have like this very strong Kuzerethakatuv, like why Dafka we compare.
Even here, it's hard to see why Tsar should be related to like Yoda Viraglov. You know, it's like the idea like you're not, unless you're fully immersed in the labor, you know, you can't really think that you contributed in the right way. It's like if you have a white collar job, you know, we all know that you're you're a capitalist, unless you have a real blue collar job, you know, you're invested your labor. Something along those lines, is that what you're thinking?
I guess. Like there's something like you have to like almost like a full like servitude. Like, you know, someone like all your limbs are owned, so to speak, by your employer. Only then. But like if you have a free arm, free hand, then it's not considered constitutes like enough.
To deserve. You have to be like fully immersed in labor in order for it to, claim that you have this entitlement.
Yeah, it's definitely surprising. I think it's not intuitive.
Right. It's like Rosho Verugo. Yeah, Evan, you have a thought on this? Evan?
Yeah. Unmuting and muting one. So I think just to maybe understand this a little bit or just gain some clarity. I think you can say it a little bit more than just like, oh, Xeris Akosov were sort of just linked to Shore, but it's really saying like you have talking maybe about that, going back to that whole Maisa aspect, like you really need to sort of do something to earn your wage. So it's sort of about potential rather than about like just being there. Like your position isn't what's going to trigger this. It's your activity that's going to. And so, although I understand the language of Achiyata Biyado Viraglov is like pretty strong, I think it's not meant to be so literal in that like you actually need to like get on all fours and start like picking things, but that you're doing like very active work to get your zuhus.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a measure of how engaged you are, something like that.
Yeah,
it's good. Hear that. Good. So that's the important. Those are the qualifications with respect to what counts as being a osem maisa with respect to the zchus achila. The last point I want to bring to our attention here, which Zacharia mentioned earlier, just looking very quickly. Yeah. Is the Rambam's Chiddush in the Sugya. So tell us, the Rambam's Chiddush is pretty fascinating. A lot of Rishonim get upset about it. You can see the Ramban has a whole Arichos in a discussion. It says, but Srachti Lafarish calls out Nesha Isidar Moshe Asvardi, right, who had this Pirush, which is wrong. And so he's upset at the Rambam, and the Ritva says the same thing. Rambam, and he thinks the Rambam's wrong. And then the Ran does the same thing. The Ran also cites the Rambam Shita. Let's see. Here. Lamadim mefurish mishnah seinu sheigra filashpo min atorah b'shas sheolzik b'mlachto v'zeh sheloka divrei Rambam. Cites the Rambam v'lo mechuvar k'dechasivna. So you know all these talmidim of the Ramban criticize the Rambam's view in the sugya here. Just shows you how novel it is. So what's the Rambam's
collusion?
What's that?
It's collusion.
Yeah, I know they're all teaming up against the Rambam. So what's the criticism of the Rambam here? Skari, you want to tell us?
Yeah, so he has a unique shita that when someone's worked with Bechubar, he seems to say that they have no right to eat while they're working. They only have a right to eat when he says Yigmor Avodaso, which seems to be that like when they finish filling up a basket, so between when they filled up that basket and they start on the next one, that's when they can eat, but not when they're in the process of filling this up. Yeah. And this changes somewhat with the Hashem Veda, but it seems to be primarily, and then in the next halacha, he identifies the lav of Chemish Lotanev with this idea of, oh, you're just not allowed to eat B'shas Malacha, and that's a lav.
Exactly. But tell us a little like more about that. Tell us a little more about this idea. So the Rambam's Chiddush is that while the Gemara seemed to say that the Poel's right begins at the Gemar Malacha of the Pri, meaning when the Pri is fully ripe and ready to be picked off the tree, the Rambam's talking about the Poel has to finish a certain amount of work for the Baal HaBayis in order to trigger his own Zchus Achila. And what I think, and the Rambam says, Poel Eino Ochel Ela Kishe Yigmor Avodaso, and he gives this example of as Zacharia said, you've already filled up the basket for the Baal HaBayis, you've dumped it into the big container, you've done the work for the Baal HaBayis, then you could eat. Eino Ochel Ela Adshe Yimali Hasal. So what I think is framing the Rambam's perspective here is the hierarchy between the employer and the employee in their entitlement to the pre, meaning does the poel have to first satisfy some obligation towards the Baal HaBayis in labor productivity before he can even assert any claim of his own? And that's really the Rambam's chiddush in the sugya here. See you, Shua. We'll see you later. We're finishing in a minute anyway. That's right. So does that make sense? You see how I think it's really about the prioritizing the Baal HaBayis' property right, or the Baal HaBayis' claim right that the worker finish some work, be productive, before the worker could have any claim to it. And the way the Rambam also talks about it is that the Poel Midoraisa has no right to eat betocha malacha. It's really kishe yigmar malachto. He has to finish like discrete units of labor in order to entitle himself to eat. Sorry, you have a thought on this? And by the way, the right is all upset about it.
Yeah, just to back up that point, I think he emphasizes over and over and over again the bitul malacha component, which is not obvious in that sugya, in that mishnah at all. That bitul malacha is the central point of, oh, you can only eat b'shas gemar malacha. He frames the love of Chemer Shlo Tanif as a bitul malacha problem, when kind of pashtus, like the Ravid explains and everyone else kind of interprets, it's a problem of eating by using like the sickle to harvest so much to eat. It's a problem of like doing like a achilas keva kind of problem. But the Rambam says, no, everything here is just like the lavim themselves are sensitive to the bitul malacha.
Good point. So the bitul malacha seems to be part of it. I would just caution, let's read Yud Beis Gimel carefully. So, Tzachari, why don't you read this for us?
Havatul Mimalachto v'achal. Oh, she'achal shelo b'shas gemar malacha.
Okay, so stop for a second. Yeah. So notice the disjunction here, the O. Oh, she'achal shelo b'shas gemar malacha. To my mind, those are two steps. So, Havatul Mimalachto v'achal is the first disjunct. Then there's the or, right? And then the second part of the disjunction is has two separate considerations. So I'm not sure if it's right to reduce everything in Halachi Yud Beis to Bitul Malacha concerns.
Mm.
No, I think it does seem, I think you're right that they're conceptually related. But I think that there are two separate bases here. One is someone who's Malacha, B, someone who's Ochel Shalob Shas Gmar Malacha. then go on. Mipia Shmuel Lamdu.
Yeah, so here's the over below Tase, Shnemar Chemish Lotanif, Mipia Shmuel Lamdu, Shekolzman Shu Osek Bekitsira, Lo Yanif Chermish La Achilaso. Machin Kolkiot.
Yeah.
Machin Paul Shaholich Biado, Mimasha Asa, Oshalaka Yaser Alachilaso, Venosin La Cherim, over below Tase, Shnemar El Kalif Alotitim. Right.
Yeah. Right.
I just don't know. It's not obvious at all in the realm that this is like a gazela point. It just said it might just be nitam of tashlumen.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the getting back to the minchas chinuch point. But I think it's striking, right, that he has these two separate considerations of bittam malacha o she'achal shelo bishas gemar malacha. As two separate considerations. That's just one important qualification to the way you're framing it, Arya.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they're both related in that certainly it seems Achila Shalom B'Shas Gemar Malacha is about the worker against the Baal HaBayis. Like he has to earn his Achila by doing the Malacha that he's hired for first before he could have any claim. I just want to point out the Achronim are a little like the Revisor Zalman in the Yevon HaEzel on Halacha Beis. He's worried about the following problem. He's worried about if the Poel could only eat this Bigmar Malachto, you might think that what the Rambam means that it's Achar Sheyismalu Kol Hasalim. Like literally at the end of the day, after he's done all his work, but he says that can't be because imkain lo yochal at sof hayom b'hapol ochal b'shas malacha v'yakarchak de kavanasa de ochal achar miloi kol sal v'zman hakila tzarech lemar dezeo kishem minafetz at sal amakum acher. So he thinks that there are these discrete units of malacha that are completed. It's like tasks. So every basket that the poel finishes, he has a right to eat a little bit after that. But not beforehand. And even later on in his analysis, Rav Zalman says, "Benir debir dibe Rambam hu demash kasav Rambam deino ochel ala achar sheyismali asal eino mishum demili asal hu begeder bigmar malacha ela mishum decholzman shelonis mali asal hare ose kapol biktira o betlisha." Praise over below Sase. I think he's trying to figure out like what this is kind of like Zachariah's point before. He's trying to figure out like what's the real issue here in the Rambam. Is it that you have to do a certain amount of work first to trigger your entitlement? Or is the idea just that you can't be eating during a Siyas Malacha? Because of Bittul Malachto Shel Baal HaBayis. So the Revisor Zalman is not sure about the relationship between those two things. So I want us to give that a little thought about the Rambam's idea here of having to finish a certain amount of Malacha first before you're entitled to, and how that relates to this Bittul Malachto Shel Baal HaBayis. Notice, though, that this is at odds with the standard view in the Rishonim. You'll see all the Rishonim say, Zachariah, you want to tell us what their view is? Like, not that you have to, like, for the Rambam, it's basically you're entitled to work Bigmar Malacha or Shelo Bishas Malacha, Migra Din. For the other Rishonim, it's the exact opposite, right?
Yeah, as in the Rishonim is they have to eat specifically Bishas Malacha, and that's like the entire Gemara of, oh, Mahalik Osa, Maisa Dami, therefore you might be justified to eat while you're being Mahalik because you're considered. That's considered B'shas Malacha. And their limitation of Gemar Malacha is like, oh yeah, that's just about your harvesting. That's just a description of the type of work, not the stage of the work.
Exactly. You get this fundamental tension about whether for the Rambam, the right kicks in Shelo B'shas Malacha and La'achar Gemar Malacha. But the other Rishonim, the right is only B'shas Malacha. So we have to figure out what's going on there. So we'll talk more about this, and I want to also just tell you to look at this Sugyan Sadi Beis. I think this is a related question to the Rambam's discussion about whether the Poel has the right to eat all the produce that he's producing. You know, like Gemara about if he could be Ochel Koseves Bedinar, even if he's only hired for Eshkol Echad, does he have the right to eat it? I think that's very much related to the Rambam's point here. is it coherent to talk about as chus achilas poel when he hasn't done anything for the Baal HaBayis yet? And then what the Rambam's trying to do in these discussions is say, like, no, it's not sensible to talk about as chus achila. The poel's got to perform first. And this, I think this is going to tie back into the underlying mechayev for the chus achilas poel, right? Obviously, if you think that he's earning it through his malacha, he's got to do malacha first to be entitled. There are lots of different ways of saying that. If you think somehow that it's like an Issi Ben Yehuda, he has to be licensed to be there, then the malacha is not going to be a precondition for the Zchus Achila. So let's chew that over. We'll talk about the Rambam Shita. We'll talk about Afilo Sacha El Ashkel Echad. We'll go back to the discussion of Mishum Bitul Malacha Shebaal HaBayis, that economic consideration. We'll wrap up this discussion, and then hopefully we'll get started next Chabura on the last part of the Sugya, which is Mishalo or Mishal Shemayim Hu Ofel. There's an interesting Reb Chaim I'm going to add to the Makor Roshit, if you saw in the Hektish part of the discussion, which is related to Mishalo or Mishal Shemayim. But we'll pick up at that after the Thanksgiving break. Sound good?
Perfect.
Shkayach.
Great. Shkayach, everyone.
Yeah.
So we're not going to meet on Thursday, right? Everyone's got plans. We shouldn't meet on Thursday, right?
That'd be so from.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so we're not going to meet on Thursday. We'll all get some other work and preparation in. And then we'll meet again on Tuesday next week. We'll pick up.
Yeah. Okay, Noah will be able to join us. He finishes class today.
Oh, awesome.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, very exciting.
That'll be fun. Yeah, that is very exciting. Super. So he'll be with us for the rest of the term. Meaning,
yeah.
Like, that's great. Probably has like a 3-month vacation or something.
It's astounding. I think they have school like 24 weeks out of the year.
Yeah.
I mean,
a racket. Really a racket.
It's absolutely. Just not getting your money's worth.
Yeah, well, you know, you pay for the diploma. That's the rule. These things. All right, I should call everyone. So we'll pick up on Tuesday. Take care.